see the list of Texas Legislature podcasts? This, yeah. They listed this like fifth or sixth.
This is? Yeah. Fifth or sixth? We need to up our numbers.
Most important one.
Yeah. Oh, wow. That's not that many. There's not that many for the
Texas
Legislature.
Oh, they listed like 35.
Oh.
Different political ones, not just journalism, but different political factions.
Hey, y'all. This is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
This is what happens behind the scenes before we start rolling, but actually we started rolling a few moments before that. Bud Kennedy is with us, Bernadine Steptoe, political producer, WFA. Bud Kennedy is a columnist, Fort Worth Star-Telegram, huge social media following, and mm-hmm. Whiteley and Wheeler back with you here in the Y'allitics penthouse.
And we're having the same beer today.
Yeah. Thanks for putting these in the fridge.
That's
Mine's
weird.
Cold. Is yours not cold?
Mine's not cold. That's how generous I am to you, actually. What's it called?
It's FUBAR. It's Fouled Up Beyond All Recognition. It's a big military term, you know, from your days in the Army, Wheeler.
Sure.
Solid Irish ale, the Irish style red. Lightly malty with a pronounced caramel, burnt sugar, raisin, and prune notes.
Wow.
Not too bitter, perfect amount of carbonation.
This is from made Mission. In Texas, but I don't know where.
Mission,
Texas. Okay, down
I'm
in the valley.
I'm glad you prepared for this, man. Your beer is hot.
you don't know
what you're drinking.
You should really appreciate that I gave you the cold one.
Bud, what are you having?
I've got West Coast IPA here from Oak Highlands Brewery. I figure from where the West begins, I'll have the West Coast IPA.
The farthest West, the man from Tarrant County here.
Good old Fort Worth. Bernadine, what you got?
Yours is a prop. Bernadine, you're not...
No, you didn't expose me.
Bernadine likes the margaritas, and that's why she's not having a beer.
I'm going to bring you one of those spicy jalapeno lime ones the next time. They're good.
Okay.
I do like that. So this is an early release of Y'allitics this week because everyone's talking about the political debate that happened on Tuesday night. Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, and Donald Trump face to face for
it's
the first time.
Week.
It has been a long week. And it was only Tuesday, but I think that two things. Let me start things out. Bud, let me ask you. Here's what struck me: Kamala Harris clearly held her own. She had a mastery of what was happening, of the issues, et cetera. She didn't land a knockout punch though, and did she need to, considering Trump's performance?
Well, she let him go. And that was, you know, probably the best thing for her, that she just let him keep building momentum and ranting, and it got to where he was just spitting out words. It was kind of like, well, some of y'all are too young to remember, but in the old days when they started having calculators and the batteries would go down, they'd just start spitting out numbers randomly. It was like Trump would just start spitting out words saying, fracking, World War III, you know.
China, exactly.
He would just start blurting things. So she let him go, but she didn't let him go too long, and she had her own points to make. She focused on you know, addressing each issue, answering questions. She didn't give full answers to everything, but she still managed to stay on the stage with him for 90 minutes without him showing her up or upstaging her in any way. She managed to somehow maintain the volume in the face of the tremendous bombast that she was up against.
Bernadine, though, did she accomplish what she needed to accomplish coming into this debate, which was to define herself for those voters who aren't as familiar with her and what her policies would be? Do you think that she was able to accomplish that in those few minutes more than 90 minutes?
Absolutely. And I think she has built herself as a prosecutor. And I think that when she came out of the gate, she put out the opening statement. This is what you're going to see. This is what you're going to expect. And throughout the entire debate, she brought them back to that opening statement. So I think that she not only showed the viewers, which were over 67 million, that I'm a prosecutor. I can handle myself. And then she also showed that she reminded those who had forgotten and wanted to just give any kind of excuse of what you had when he was president.
She invited people to his rallies.
which was unprecedented. But that showed how confident she was.
But see, that also allowed her to set him up when she said, hey, please come out to his rallies. You really should see them. It's quite a spectacle, the things that you're going to hear. But just beware, a lot of people get bored and exasperated and leave early. It was clearly an attempt by Vice President Harris to get under his skin, to trigger him. And surely in his debate prep, they told him, do not take that kind of bait. But he took it, and he took it several times.
Well, she called him boring, which is probably the worst thing you can call him.
Yeah.
Well, what did you make of the body language? Because Jason and I were watching this, and it was remarkable that she comes out first and initiates the handshake, and that obviously completely unscripted. You didn't know what he was going to do. She didn't know what he was going to do, so it was a gamble there. Mm-hmm. But then she keeps looking at him, makes eye contact the entire time. He doesn't look at her once.
In defense of him, I do that with Whiteley all the time. I don't look at him.
Well, everything about
it
was interesting.
That way.
You know, we had heard beforehand that he might do something to try to show that he's almost a foot taller than he is, than she is, that he might somehow try to stand beside her. Instead, she came directly over to him. Mm-hmm. She offered the hand. It was a perfect throwback to Ann Richards and Clayton Williams. Mm. Ann Richards extending the hand. Clayton Williams wouldn't shake it. Clayton Williams lost the election right there that night.
Yeah.
So that was the first test to see if he would shake her hand. He did. But then, you know, and by the way, the way she walked over and said, you know, what did she say? Nice to meet you, Kamala Harris.
I'm Kamala Harris.
Let's have a good
I'm Kamala
debate.
Harris. Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. And the so then, but then he was trying not to look at her at all, and it just, you felt like he was just boiling over, just itching to look, mm-hmm. but he just tried to keep focused, and then he started giving her this side eye, like,
yeah,
what's she
that.
Saying over there? And it wasn't until almost an hour into the debate that he started giving her that side
I eye. Love that Ann Richards reference, too, because I had forgotten all about that.
Oh,
well,
yes.
You remember who Kamala's...
that 88? When was that?
It was
let's remember that Ann Richards' granddaughter was Kamala's campaign manager advisor 4 years ago, and that Cecile Richards has been a close advisor, and I imagine there's a lot of Ann Richards in this campaign.
And I think that move also threw him off some. It just started because she invaded his space.
Right. Yeah, he looked uncomfortable with it right away.
She invaded, because he was going to ignore her, because he was headed straight to the podium, but he invaded his space. Mm. And for anybody, that would sort of make you uncomfortable. So starting out, she put him on the defense.
Let me ask this. You mentioned in her intro how she sort of laid out what she was going to do, what the night was going to be like. In that intro, she also told people, this guy here is going to lie a lot. There's going to be a lot of lies. She called him a liar several times through the night. He called her a liar back. The moderators here ended up getting in a few times and doing some fact checks. I think it was four times on the former President Trump. A lot has been made about this on social media. People upset that they fact-checked him four times. They didn't fact-check her once. But then other people saying, well, you know, he was the one needing the fact-checking. She wasn't. But some others saying that now they should have fact-checked her a little bit more closely, too.
Well, here's what her team and a number of Democrats are saying is that she didn't lie. That she misled, so why would you fact-check her? But come on now.
Yeah, lie and misled? I mean, come on.
Well, I'm just telling you how they're presenting it, but let me tell you something. Think about this. How credible of a journalist would you be if you allow somebody to get on TV and say that people are eating dogs and cats and not fact-check them? I mean, that was more on their credibility as whether or not you want to fact check, but what it did
there was
allow,
also the claim about abortions, essentially executions of babies after they're born in some states.
And that was all tangled up in language, and you know, if you believe that a fetus is a baby, and a fetus that's still alive goes through an abortion, you know, that is a baby that is killed after it's born. I mean, that was all tangled up in language. They did fact checks on positions that were politically arguable. I'm not saying that they were all totally false, but they were positions that if you understood, you know, what Republicans say and the, you know, what Trump's position, you would see that there might have been some political validity.
Well, one of the soft checks that he got was to, the former president recently has said a couple of times that he was beaten in 2020 by a whisker or you know, by just a tiny margin. And that was presented to him like, hey, that goes counter to what you've been saying since the 2020 election, that it was rigged and that it was stolen from you. And he says, oh, that was just sarcasm recently. I was joking, essentially, when I said I was beaten by a whisker. And David Muir said, actually, I watched the videotape. It did not seem like you were joking.
Yeah, it did seem like it. I mean, I like the fact that NBA referees have even-up calls. I like makeup calls. I think nobody likes to see a game where the referees are all for one team. You know, and I think that they really tried hard to have a fact-based debate and to bring corrections and fact checks where needed. But it just it did look like sometimes that it was all on Trump and not on Harris.
Mm. I was talking to a few people after the debate, and these are Republicans and Democrats, and kind of the central theme that they were all saying is, yeah, I watched the first half hour, I watched the first 45 minutes or so, there was too much personal animosity in there. Did Texans walk away with any changed minds at all about either candidate, you think, Bud?
Well, I think that a few Texans decided to vote or not vote. I think that's the only...
You think this got some people off the couch?
The only difference was, I mean, nobody's undecided about Trump or Harris. Nobody was undecided about Trump and Biden. They were just undecided about whether to vote. A lot of Democrats weren't going to come out and vote. Those Democrats are now going to come out and vote. Republicans that were going to come out and vote, some of them might not now. They think Trump has waffled too much on abortion, and they might not vote for him after all. I see it on Twitter all the time from some prominent Republicans. So it's all about voting or not voting, and I think that that's where some people, even in Texas, might get off the couch.
You were about to say something too, Bernadine, when I...
When you interrupted
her. I think Bud just made a very good point in terms of if anything that the debate did was sort of suppress the Republican, the independent voters who are not satisfied with either one. Hmm. But I think that it...
But those are the people who have to show up to decide this thing, aren't they?
Well. Now, keep in mind now, we haven't talked about, because we're talking about the debate, they don't have to vote for president.
Yeah.
They can skip that race.
They can skip down.
True.
Is that really going to happen, though? I mean, I've heard people say it's going to happen on the Republican side. Maybe it will over there. Maybe it happens on the Democratic
side. We've seen it happen. In 2008, we saw Democrats... There were so many Democrats in the Beaumont and Corpus Christi markets, which were swing markets, that voted, that skipped the top line, wouldn't vote for Barack Obama, but voted for the rest of the Democratic ticket. Mm.
And if we, this is strictly primary, but go look at the March primary. Cruz got more votes than Trump did. Mm-hmm. So they skipped that top race.
Right.
So obviously it's going to happen. Ultimately, they have, if they're going to go to the polls and they don't like either presidential candidate, they have down ballot races that they can choose.
Yeah. Now, did Trump do his job, though? And that was, I think, at least one of his big jobs going into this debate was to convince those conservatives out there who were leery of showing up and voting for him this time, the traditional conservatives, not the MAGA wing of the party, and also Nikki Haley voters. Did he reach those voters? Did he convince them?
He brought back some of the abortion voters who were really wondering about him. He was strong on abortion. You know, what he said, he was emphatic enough that I think it's brought some of those voters back who had kind of given up on him the last couple of weeks, that he was flip-flopping too much. Mm.
But I will say this. He had a very good closing because that was very effective. It was just
too dark. It was very dark.
It was too late. Yeah. Because when he said that, okay, if she could do all of this, why hadn't she done it?
Right.
That was a very good closing. It's just that then you can bring the argument, well, she wasn't president.
Yeah. He painted a very dark picture, though, you know, basically saying that the country's just, it's going to, I don't remember if that was the quote where he said it's going to hell, but it was essentially that.
Is it FUBAR? Is that what he
was
suggesting?
No, there was maybe it was FUBAR. But he, you know, basically said, you keep this and that's what's going to happen.
And people are eating dogs. That was another
one. But you know what? I'm serious. And I, one of his staunch supporters, went on social media and did a rant saying that I blame all of you who created this story and forced this false narrative for him saying that because putting that story out there, it put it in his mind and he said it.
Huh. Well, there will be
there's discipline also. I mean, discipline, obviously. Let's bring it back to Texas just for a moment here. The biggest race in this state, obviously, is Colin Allred and Ted Cruz for U.S. Senate. Did this debate impact that at all, Bernadine? Kamala's performance, Trump's performance?
I think that the reason I think it did, because some of those Democrats who were not thinking about voting because they were not happy with Biden, that now they're going to vote, and they're going to vote. You would think that they would vote, because if they were so dissatisfied with that top ticket as a Democrat, then and they're going out and they're happy with the vice president, they're going with Colin Allred. So I think that that helps them in that respect, because the momentum for Vice President Harris is going to fall down. They're not, you would think that they would not vote for President, former President, but they're going to go to the polls and they're going to vote for Colin Allred.
What do you think, Bud?
Trump voters are going to be Cruz voters. Allred has to get a few of those Trump voters pried away somehow. Trump is going to win state by still 5 or 6 points. Cruz is, Allred has to just hope to come closer. I don't think that it really moved the needle one way or the other. I do look at the numbers of new registrations and new voters in Texas. I think there might be some more Democrats than Republicans in that list, particularly voters. We see a tremendous number of registrations on college campuses and among young people. We always see these numbers that there are tremendous registrations among young people. They don't show up. We'll see if they do this time.
You were saying, too, there are 2.5 million more
new
registered voters
from the last time Cruz was on the ballot 6 years ago.
And we don't know which way these new voters lean, do we?
We don't know which way they lean, but, you know, We can bet that they're probably right down the line of the way Texans have been. There has not been any, as the voting population's grown in the past years, the proportion hasn't changed. We can bet they're just like Texans have been. They're 50% Republican and 43-44% Democrat, 5 or 6% Independent. And you have to get all the independents, every single one, in order to beat a Republican. It hasn't happened in Texas in 30 years.
Yeah, but I know in those 30 years, though, you've watched this, you've listened to this, and every time we come around to it, you know, you hear people saying, maybe it turns blue this time. You know, Democrats say, maybe we can turn the state blue. What do you make of these polls here? I mean, the most recent ones we have from August and September, Emerson gives Vice President Harris the best news that she's gotten out of any of these polls. It's one of the more recent ones, putting her behind by 4 points. There was another one putting her down 4 points, one down 5 points, another down 7 points. Interesting thing with this is two of those four polls in August and September show her within the margin of error in Texas. That's a little bit different from what we've seen in the past, but you're still confident that we're going to see a 5 or 6 point win by Trump this time.
You know, she's slightly closer, but I don't think anything's changed to dramatically, caused any upheaval in this race. I think that you have so many more Republicans in Texas. The Republicans are going to turn out and vote. The Democrats might or might not turn out and vote. The Republicans are working hard, as we see all over the state, to minimize Democratic voting and to reduce new voter turnout. So. I think that the Republicans are going to hold on to Texas and keep this state as long as possible, and the numbers will probably bear that out.
Go ahead, Bernadine.
I don't think that the state of Texas is going to go Democratic on the presidential level, but that's not where the focus is.
Yeah,
the
you're
focus
right.
is on the senatorial race.
Yeah,
and that's where you look and look at whether or not that turnout is going to affect that race. Because
do you think it is?
Well, you know what?
Tell us, Bernadine. What?
Now we're about to get something.
Tell us.
It's interesting because, if you see a number of polls where Colin Allred, they were saying that they didn't know him, but the most recent polls show him like 2 points. So there is some movement there. And I think that as Cruz, and it could be just rhetoric, but as Cruz has said, you do not underestimate him. And I think at this point, and even considering the state of Texas, at this point, I don't think you can call that senatorial race. Huh. But former President Trump is not getting ready to lose Texas. But that's not the focus.
But is it too close to call the Allred Cruz race?
No, I mean, I just don't think so. You know, Cruz beat Beto by 3 points, almost 3 points. This is a different race with Trump on the top of the ticket. I don't know anybody who has said they're going to vote for Trump, but they're disappointed in Cruz, they're going to vote for Allred. Mm-hmm. I knew Republicans 6 years ago who said that they were disappointed in Cruz and planned to vote for Beto O'Rourke. They liked what he did on the defense committee. They thought that he was actually more pro-defense and pro-defense jobs at places like Lockheed and Fort Worth, that Beto had more to offer. Allred doesn't have that. Allred has the same deficiencies Beto had of not having the valley. There's a turbulent campaign in the valley between the Democrats and Republicans. I just don't know where Allred's new voters will be. They're going to come over from Trump.
And you say the valley, the Rio Grande Valley in
Rio
South
Grande
Texas.
Valley, that's right.
Texas.
But just remind viewers, Colin Ollerith is not talking about taking away guns. Mm. And that's where Beto lost
He hadn't done that yet. That was in the presidential debate.
But that's what I'm saying. He's not talking about taking away guns, and that's where Beto lost a lot of those who would even consider voting for him, taking away guns in Texas.
Let's go back to the debate real quick. Okay, so it's not good for Donald Trump that after the debate was over with, Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican senator who's been an ally, said it was a missed opportunity. Chris Christie, who prepared Trump for the last round of debates in the last election, was really strong, saying that it was apparent that Trump didn't have somebody to, quote, smack him around this time like he would with Trump when they were in debate prep. He says he ended up going with his instinct, which was to be an angry and grievance candidate. He chased every rabbit down every hole, he says. She accomplished what she needed to accomplish, and he helped her. And then we had the headline from Fox News. It says, Britt Hume, make no mistake about it, Trump had a bad night. To Trump's diehard supporters, none of that's going to matter. They're still going to show up. They're still going to vote for him. My question is there another debate after all of this? Will he take another bite at the apple? Will she be willing to show up again? Will we see them meet again on stage?
I can't imagine there being another debate. This one was scheduled a long time ago when we thought Joe Biden would be involved. You know, he's been doing debates. He ran for president in 2000. He ran for president last century in the Reform Party. You know, he's been doing debates for, you know, 24 years of his life. He filed to run for president the day after Barack Obama was reelected in 2012. You know, he's done all these debates forever. Let's face it, you know, even if you love Donald Trump, you have to say this is a former president who's seen his better days, and it showed on the debate stage the other night.
Is he going to want a do-over, though?
I don't think, you know, the night of the debate, he said that he would definitely want more debates, or no, that he didn't want a debate again. The morning after, he said, sure, I'm going to have a lot more debates. I don't think he wants any more debates, and I think they'll, you know, the rules he sets, it has to be only Sean Hannity, you know, or whatever. I mean, the rules he sets will make it impossible. Mm.
And he's laying the groundwork. He's saying, why would he have another debate when he won the first one? Mm. So why would he? And why would Vice President Harris have another when she walked away so strong in terms of her what her supporters and most of the people say? But you know what? I think that I thought, you know, he does have a large self-importance, right? Mm. That he would get back on the stage and say, okay, I can do better next time. Mm. But I think with everything that you just read, I don't think he wants another match.
Yeah. Well, and you know, regardless of what you think of Kamala Harris, she prepared for this. She was ready for this. She knew, you know, where to look. She knew the gestures to make, et cetera, et cetera. And regardless of what you think about her, out of all of the debates he has appeared in, she handled him better than I think any of his prior opponents had, including, you know, the Hillary Clintons of the world, Marco Rubio, you know, all of the, 15 candidates on the stage with him back in the Republican primaries way back when. None of them seemed to be able to withstand him and handle him the way she was able to do that.
Keep in mind, she's a prosecutor. And when you're prosecuting a case, you look at the weaknesses. You tailor in on the weaknesses. You look at their strengths and sort of try to modify and bring down the strengths. I think that if any other instance that I've seen, that this showed how good of a prosecutor she is. She's a prosecutor.
Bud,
I think she handled him incredibly well. I don't think he handled her very well. I don't think he brought out the worst side of her ever. You know, he needed to make so many more points about, you know, weak positions and things where she had changed her position or what did she really mean. And, you know, he did nothing to throw a fishing line out and hook her and reel her in.
I think he tried to a few times. Yeah. It's just she didn't take the bait the way he did.
He said
Putin endorsed her and blah, blah, blah. She didn't even acknowledge it.
Right. She would just completely abruptly change the subject if she thought he was trying to hook her into something, she would just talk about something. And some people described it as babbling, but it was her completely changing the subject to get away from what he was, you know, the path he was trying to take her down. Hmm.
You asked my last question about whether there's going to be another debate.
So you're done?
I'm done, but I would just bring up something that you noted, Bud, and you did this recently. That was likely the last time we're ever going to see Donald Trump on a debate stage.
Don't you think? I mean, I don't think he'll run in 4 years if he loses. If he wins, there's no he won't be debating again. I think that was his last performance. I think he brought all his frustrations, anger, everything that Donald Trump has been for 30 years in New York, for 20 years on a public stage, he brought to that stage and said, America's falling apart. I mean, but he brought all of his anger and frustration to that stage and spilled it all out in one 90-minute show. And the only reason that he wants to debate again because he wants to get back on TV some more. He wants some more TV. We're in a weird situation now. I was going to point that out. We've never even had a debate this early in most presidential years.
Yeah.
The normal Commission on Debates doesn't start until the end of September when you have the regular cycle. So this was an early debate. If this was the last debate, we got 6 weeks to fill. He's going to want to be back on TV some more.
Mm. What could possibly happen in these next 6 weeks in the absence of a debate?
Well, what?
The rhetorical question. So.
It's going to be a wild ride.
That's not a question.
No, it's not.
That's a statement.
Go ahead and bring us home.
It's surprising. You know, I put nothing past former President Trump. Now, a regular thinking person outside of the wonderful former President Trump, you wouldn't get back on a stage. But I put nothing past.
Do you think it's possible then?
I don't think it's possible with
Harris?
With Harris. But, you know, I was just responding. He said he will never, I've never put anything past former President Trump. But I don't know if he'll get back up there. Because he is not going to get beat again. Because he doesn't know how to handle her. Mm-hmm. You know, that's unfamiliar territory for him. Mm. He doesn't know how to handle her. So he's not getting ready to get back up there and get beat again by a woman.
Okay, last thing. Oh,
he was
ahead.
Loving the moment. He loved this moment so much, he went to the spin room afterward, he did interviews, he called Fox the next morning. I think some of that was him wanting to get on TV right now, but I think some of it was him living in the moment and saying, inside, I know this may be the last time.
Yeah, I think some critics of his performance, though, said that that was also a very quick do-over, like, let me extend this out and go down to the spin room and see if I can make up for, missed opportunities
change
on stage.
Right.
Finding friends. Yeah.
Last question here is, I ride my bike a lot, I'm out and about, I drive a lot.
You don't rollerblade anymore?
Sometimes.
Well,
it's not as common now.
It hasn't been as common since, 1993, but anyways, go ahead.
I'm going to bring it back again. I'm out and about, and maybe it's just early in the season, because you were talking about, Bud, how this has been kind of an accelerated season, and we're seeing these debates early. It seems like before, I've seen all of these yard signs. I've seen people really showing, what they're going to do. I don't see any of that now. Am I early? Is this early? Have y'all noticed that?
No.
Or just, is it that nobody wants to get in fights with their neighbors because everybody's so polarized? I mean, what is this? I thought
point.
By now we would see a lot of signs. Am I the only one not seeing that?
I see some signs, but I think that, remember the Democratic ticket change.
Yeah.
So
those signs took a while.
Yeah,
I did see a Harris-Walls one the other day, though,
so
it's available out there.
Yeah.
But where are the Trump-Vance signs? Where are the signs?
I'm going to tell you where I see them. And I'm not putting Ellis County on the.
But you are. But anyways,
we're
go
not going to name Ellis County.
we're not going to front them out.
So just southeast of Dallas, if you're not familiar, just southeast
go
of Dallas.
County.
Yeah.
Okay,
so
you'll
see
a bunch of Trump signs there. Yeah.
Ellis County, which has the most handguns per capita in Texas, I believe.
And it's
right?
Rural.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Bud knows the best. I love it. Yeah. Statistics.
Tiny trivia.
Texas trivia.
That is.
I'll go down there and see that. I don't see the Trump signs either. But if I went west of Fort Worth into, particularly Weatherford is. 70% Democratic. When you go west of Weatherford into Brock, past that, it's 95% Republican. 70% Republican, I meant. Go past, it's 95% Republican. I'd probably see more signs.
Yeah, I thought you were about to make some news here, because I was like, Weatherford
is
not 70%.
Sorry about that. I didn't realize that.
Weatherford did not flip.
That's that West Coast IPA talking there, huh? With the final word.
Too many sips.
Guys, right. Thanks so much for
doing
this with us. I mean, it's a lot to digest, We all, had those first takeaways from the debate the night after, but, it's a lot to digest since then. It's going to be interesting to see what the polls show. out of that debate? Does it really move the needle at all? Because, you know, they always say that debates do not win the presidency. They can help you lose it, yeah, but they don't help. They don't necessarily win the presidency.
And what happens in the next 6 weeks?
Yeah, especially since this is so early.
It is early. So that's something we're going to be watching. How does it affect Texas?
Well, plus, if the Cowboys and the Longhorns keep having good seasons, that's what everybody's going to talk about.
That's a whole other podcast, bud.
I don't think they're going to move off of this race too soon.
Yeah.
I think that conversation is going to continue because too many uncertainties are going to come out.
Yeah, and there's a lot at stake here. Yeah. And these are the contrast between these two candidates could not be sharper.
There's too much time left in this ballgame.
Yeah.
And no more time left in this podcast.
Very good.
Thanks.
Boy, you're on today.
Thank Bernadine. That's the FUBAR.
A little bit of FUBAR in you.
There you go. Talking. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week.
And thanks for that cold FUBAR, correct? You wanted to
I'll
thank me?
It.
Okay. See you next time.
Hey, y'all. Want to see the Jasons Talk Politics? Download the WFAA Plus streaming app for your smart TV and watch the latest episode of Y'allitics each Wednesday night at 8:30.